Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same, and you will also be able to find common ground so that you relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, my guest is Nancy Byrne. She majored in psychology at the University of Colorado at Denver for both her graduate and undergraduate coursework. She has a deep respect for life, all life, and she's devoted to empowering others by helping them remember who they truly are and to listen to their inner guidance rather than to everyone else around them. She has worked at an adolescent psychiatric treatment hospital. She's worked as executive director for a woman in need of group support program, a rape crisis center, and is the director of a victim services unit at a major police department in the Denver area, as well as a counselor at several high-risk shelters for adolescents. And Nancy has recently moved from Colorado to the Pacific Northwest. She lives on an island not far from Seattle in Washington with her husband and two Dobermans and, I believe, six cats now. And for more information about her, you can visit her webpage, which is World Wide Web, www.choices-nlb.com. That's www.choices-nlb.com. So Nancy, I'd like to welcome you and ask you once again, how are you tonight?
Thank you. I am great, David. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Oh, I'm glad to have you here. And, you know, it's interesting in a sense, some of our paths have, our past paths have crossed just somewhat because I had been a social worker for many years working with troubled adults, and it certainly sounds like that had been part of your challenging past. And I'd like to take you back on a journey in time because you're a very spiritual person, as I've come to know from our brief chats, and I'd like to just see where little Nancy began on her pathway to spirit and bringing you up to the point in time when you chose the coursework that you did and where it's taken you since then. So I'm just going to kind of give you free rein, and if you would, give us a little bit of your story.
Okay, well, I think that I've always believed in, you know, a supreme being of some type, but I think when everything actually started to kind of turn around for me, I had a pretty rough childhood. I was about 10. I lived in Rocky Ford, Colorado, and we lived across the street from the Catholic Church. We were Catholics, and for some reason, I have no idea why, but it was just an extremely low point in my life. I remember Dad had gone out to the bar to drink, and I snuck out of the house late at night and went over to the church. They didn't lock the doors, and I walked in and walked up to the front, and there were all the lights were off except for two candles someone had lit for penance. And other than that, all the lights were off. I went up to the front pew and knelt down, and I was praying, and I asked God to please, please, please. I was just begging him, please just let me die. I I was, I guess, trying to put God on a guilt trip. I was telling him that so many people want to live and they die, and I wanted to die, and so why was he making me live? And suddenly I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I thought it was the priest, and he was going to take me home, and I was going to get in big trouble. And I turned around, and there was no one there. And when I looked back to the front of the church, it was just this, I can't even explain. It was just this kind of a glowing light. It was just gold and kind of white. It was just the whole altar was just ablaze with this amazing light. And I remember feeling so horrible that I had been given this wonderful, wonderful treasure, this gift of life. And I was throwing it back in God's face and saying I didn't want it. And I just felt so awful that, you know, life is so precious. It's the most amazing gift we can possibly be given. And so I ran out of the church and ran back home thinking that even God wouldn't follow me to my home because if Dad was there, you know, no good thing would come there. But so I think to me that was just it. It was kind of imparted to me that, you know, that I am loved, that somebody greater than a human being truly, truly loved me, and that there was a reason for my life. And I was just a kid, and I don't know how it was just. I just knew at that moment that, you know, we can either wallow in despair or we can just rise above it, and that somehow we all have a purpose. And I really believe that we all have a reason for being here. I don't think spirit just makes people just to make them walking around and you know, living their own lives and just taking care of their own needs. I truly believe that we all have a purpose, and we just do not realize. I liked your introduction that we all are alike, and we have so much in common, and we're all connected. You know, we need to help each other and work together, and it's just important to think about other people too. And instead of focusing on our differences, we need to focus on our similarities, because we truly are a lot alike. We have so much in common. We're unique and we're different, but we really, it's amazing how much alike all human beings are.
Well, we're part of a wonderful tapestry, and those unique differences are just so delicious because it makes for the diversity of all people and of all creation. And yet it's those common threads that unite the tapestry or the patchwork or however you want to look at it as a metaphor that bonds us all together. And I like what you said about how we're all connected. And I do believe, and I like the way you changed from thinking to truly believing. I heard you state that when you talked about higher power, if you will. And thank you for gracing us with your vulnerability as you told that story. It was very poignant, and I was very moved by the light that you experienced in the church, the feeling of the scared little girl who received some form of comfort from some power greater than herself. So thank you for sharing that. How did you come to be drawn to work with a population of people that experience such challenges?
Well, I had some people help me as, you know, growing up. I remember in second grade I had a teacher that was, everybody thought she was just horrible and mean, and I believe her name was Mrs. Allen, and she just took a liking to me and just, thought I was kind of special. And I had a grandma and a grandpa that just really, I didn't get to see them very often, but when I did, they were always very kind to me. So, and also, I don't know, I just always wanted, I initially wanted to really help kids because I guess I knew what my childhood was like, and, you know, you're scared and there's no one there to help you and the system can't help you. So I got a job with social services initially, just as a stenographer, and in the child, and at that time it was called the Child Welfare Division, and then I transferred over to Littleton and worked in social services there. Then I really wanted to be a social worker, and then I decided I wanted to just, you know, just work with a lot of different people, and it ended up that I was, it seems like a lot of women particularly, but men too, adults, were really drawn to me and or came into my path, and I was able to work with them, and it was just kind of, you know, it was an eye-opener to me. I've always been so private about my past, thinking that if people knew, you know, my roots, no one would ever like me. I wouldn't be accepted. They would think I was, what, a bad seed or something. And it's just amazing how many people you run into that have gone through some pretty horrific experiences, and every single one of them thinks they're the only one that's had this experience. And so it's really taught me that, it's good to share and let people know that they're not the only ones. They're not alone. And you know what? The things that happen to you, the people that have mistreated you or abused you, it has really nothing to do with you. And we blame ourselves and think we're unworthy and nobody loves us, we're unlovable. It really, truly has nothing to do with you. It's just the things that they've been through. They're, you know, some of them are incapable of showing love because they've never experienced it. They just, they're so unhappy with their lives for one reason or another. They just can't find it in their hearts to show kindness. And I think many people don't even know how to begin to show kindness. They feel uncomfortable. They're angry. They're just lashing out, but it has nothing to do with you. And that's one of the things I really tried to get across to some of the kids when I worked at Cleo Wallace, the Adolescent Psychiatric Treatment Hospital, is when their parents, you know, we had some really, really, really cool kids, and here they were in a psychiatric treatment center, and I think many of them were there because their parents just didn't want them.
Mm. Well, I like what you were saying about how it has nothing to do with you. And I think that when, well, I believe my own experience has been as I've gone out into the world, especially in the world of 12-step recovery, I've discovered how many people there are that grew up thinking they were the only ones, that they were the cause of the problems. And it is so empowering to have a messenger such as yourself to let people know that, let's face it, all families are dysfunctional from one degree to another, and some are very dysfunctional and toxic. And, you know, yet everybody within the family systems does the best they can with what they know about themselves. And what you said about people, meaning adults who did not show the love that the children deserved and are worth and were worthy of, that they themselves were not taught that. And that's a very compassionate way of looking at things. And I think ultimately for anybody that's been a victim of a traumatic past, there is that journey towards from self-forgiveness to forgiving others. And it's so important to forgive yourself, first of all, don't you believe?
Yes, I think that is crucial.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your book, and let's talk about your life's work, because that's the thrust of what this program is here for tonight. And I'm very, very interested in hearing about the inner guidance that you refer to. And I wonder if you would talk a little bit about your book.
Okay. Well, this is just my belief, but I feel that, first of all, what we were talking about, you know, victimization and our childhoods, and my belief is that before we were even born, our souls knew what life lessons we needed to learn, and that we chose. You know, I think that I chose my family. My soul chose my family because it was a family that would teach me to be strong and to stand on my own feet and to have compassion for other people. And so while I wouldn't want to go through that again and I wouldn't wish it on anyone else, I'm actually grateful for all of my life's experiences because they've made me who I am today. And I finally really, really like who I am today. And I think that we all have an inner guidance system, and we just need to learn to listen to it. We get so busy running around like kind of chickens with our heads cut off, or, you know, I refer to us as, you know, rats in a maze. We run around from one side to the other to hurry up and just get back to this end, and we don't take time to really enjoy life and find out what is important. It's we're just so busy. We're socialized. We have been taught, you know, sometimes different religious view that God is a vengeful God and he'll smite us if we don't do exactly. We're given free will, but he will smite us if we, you know, don't do exactly what we're supposed to do. And to me, that is not, you know, the supreme being, the divine, the spirit that I know. To me, spirit is just the most compassionate, understanding, caring, and loving essence I've ever met. And I believe that spirit wants us to be happy, truly, truly wants us to be happy and to enjoy this gift of life that we've been given. And we've been given everything we need to succeed and to have a good life. It's really, truly up to us. You know, it's kind of like they say that, you know, the athletes that go on to be number one or to succeed or to go to the Olympics really aren't the very best athletes. They're usually the ones that had to work harder. When you have been given everything, sometimes it comes too easy for you and you don't realize that not everyone has it that easy. You don't realize that you have a gift. And so you kind of, I think sometimes we take what we've been given and blessed with for granted. And, you know, and we just kind of fall into some sort of complacency or something. And when you aren't blessed with, you know, if life doesn't come easy for you, you try harder sometimes. I think that we've all been given so much, and if you have a desire in your heart to be someone or to do something, you've also been given everything you need to accomplish that, or you wouldn't have that desire in your heart. And you know how they say whales, I think, have sonar, the birds know how to fly south in the winter. Even the leaves on the trees turn up before a big storm to catch as much moisture as possible. And we have been given our own GPS system. We all have our own inner guidance. We just don't listen. And you know what? I have had a huge problem with that. I truly, honestly, with all my heart, believe that spirit is here and wants to help me and loves me and cares about me. That's the one thing I know with all my heart and my soul. And I still doubt and still question and still sometimes have a hard time really, really trusting, you know, this move to Whidbey Island. Spirit told me that I was going to be moving to Whidbey Island. I'm terrified of water. I was like, there's no way I'm moving to Whidbey Island. My dad tried to drown me as a kid. I don't want to be around water. I remember that feeling of trying to breathe and getting water in your lungs and choking and being terrified and panic-stricken. And the thought of moving to an island just, oh, my gosh. And but my automatic writing said I was supposed to be here. So my husband and I came. Actually, a girlfriend had invited us to come and visit her. She was going to do a book signing for me, but it didn't work out because her husband was being transferred. So I wrote an automatic writing and asked, well, then why did she invite us if it wasn't going to turn out? What was the reason of this? And Spirit said that she didn't know at the time, but that she'd invited me because this is where I was going to move. And I was like, yeah. And so my husband and I came, and we checked it out, and we thought it was beautiful, and my husband could breathe easier. He has problems breathing with the dry air, and we went back, and I did another automatic writing, you know, so why did we go? And Spirit said, you know, you went because you're going to be moving there. I must have done four automatic writings, and my husband finally said, how many times are you going to ask the same question? If I was Spirit, I'd say, go back to, you know, to the letter on such and such date, paragraph second. And I thought, well, that's pretty rude. So I went back, though, and I looked in my journal, and that's exactly what it said. And I came out just kind of chagrined. Okay, I guess we're supposed to move. But so we do. Even though you experience this walk with Spirit and you know that Spirit is always there, boy, sometimes our humanness just gets in there, and, you know, we want to ask other people what we should do, and they're in the same boat we are. They have no idea. You know, why wouldn't we trust in a greater, all-knowing, all-encompassing source instead of, you know, just reaching out to other men for our answers?
Well, how do we get in touch with that inner guidance that, based on what I'm hearing from you, what I'm drawing from you, comes from directly from Source. It comes from that benevolent power that some people may have mislabeled in the past as a vengeful or fearful God. And just as an aside, I wanted to say to those listeners, if that's the kind of God that you have, and it's not making you feel quote-unquote good, then you may want to try to find a God that makes you feel good inside. You're the only one that can do that for yourself. You're the only one that can ultimately make you feel good. But life is about joy. It is about goodness. It is about love. So getting back to that inner guidance, do you believe that comes from God?
I think it is God. Every major religion tells us that the Spirit of God lives in us. And when I wrote my book, I refer to God, but I usually talk about Spirit. And somebody said, well, I don't know if I should be reading this because I'm a Christian. Who is Spirit? Well, it's the Spirit of God. And I am not, I don't want to prophesize to anyone. There are people that don't believe in Jesus. There are people that believe in Buddha. There are people that, you know, believe in the divine. And so I'm just referring to the Spirit of the divine as Spirit. And, yes, I believe it truly comes from God. And I think there's, you know, there's an I was raised in the Catholic Church, and then I went to Bible college, so all I really know about is the Bible, but I'm not trying to push it on anyone. But there's a verse that says that if you ask your father for a piece of bread, will he give you a scorpion? No. You know, I think if you're asking God, Spirit, whatever you call, you know, this divine essence that is in each of us, if you truly are asking, Spirit is not going to let some satanic being give you an answer. Spirit is not going to let, I mean, if you ask most normal parents that care about their kids for something good, they're not going to let harm come to you. And I believe that. I believe if you're asking Spirit for an answer, you're going to get the answer. That's all there is to it, if you're open to it and listen. Sometimes we're not open to it. Sometimes we don't want the answer. You know, I do readings sometimes for people, and they try to convince me, usually, that this one person is the right person for them, that, oh my gosh, they're in love with him, they can't live without him, that this is the most important person, and they know, even though this person hasn't shown them, that this person loves them too. I'm not giving them the answer. It's spirit, so it doesn't do any good to try to convince me. And spirit sees the whole picture. We don't. We see life through little blinders, and we want what we want now. And you know, the spirit sees what in the big picture, what's best for us, and tries to guide us and direct us in that direction. And we need to listen, because spirit wants more for us and wants us to be happier than we even want for ourselves. Sometimes the blessings you get, when you look back at it, it's like, oh my goodness, I never, ever, ever would have imagined. I couldn't have ever thought that I could be so happy, or that this would have happened. Writing the book, you know, all through, well, even clearer back in high school, my teachers would say, gosh, you're really a great writer, you should write. And then I woke up one morning, and I was thinking, I don't have anything to write about. And actually, my girlfriend had told me I should write a book about my life, and I thought, huh? My life, oh my gosh. And I had tried. I had written, David, this is so weird, and I cried and cried and cried when I read it. I had actually written like four pages about my about my past, and it was horrible. It was not, you know, my book was truly written by spirit, because it was uplifting, and it had a sense of humor, and it was, when I wrote it, it was devastating. It was doom and gloom. It was, oh my God, it was like I was wallowing in misery, and people would have been suicidal if they would have read it. So anyway, one morning I woke up, and spirit said, you need to write a book. And I was like, I don't have anything to say. Spirit was like, just start writing, and I'll tell you what to say. And so I did, and the book was done in just a short period of time, a few weeks, except for I had about half a chapter left. And then, like I just said before, we trust people, other people just like us, that don't have any more information than we do. I met a friend, and she's a PhD psychologist, and she had written a bestseller. And so I asked her if she had any tips for me. I said, you know, I've never written a book. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get it published. I have no idea. I just know that God told me to write this book. And she said, oh, Nancy, if I had it to do again, I wouldn't. She said, I wouldn't write a book. She said, it's so much different than it was when I published my book. She said, it's only 1 out of every 10 people get their book published. It's an exercise in futility. It just consumes all of your time. And it's about $65,000 to get a book published. And I was like, $65,000? I don't have that much money. So I just put the manuscript on the shelf, and it sat there for almost 2 years. And then, again, I woke up, and Spirit said, if you want me to get your book published, you're going to have to finish writing it. So I went out, and that day I finished the last chapter. And then I got on Facebook, which I've been on for about 4 or 5 years, I guess, and I'd never seen an advertisement for Balboa Press, ever. And there it was on Facebook, and I was like, huh, Balboa, oh, they're a division of Hay House, and I would love to have Hay House pick up my book. But I had bought this desk reference book, and I was scanning through it thinking, oh my gosh, who do I call? What do? Do you just send them letters? Do you send them copies of your book? And I came out again and told my husband, you know, doubting Thomas. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I've never published. This is too much. I don't know who to contact, blah, blah, blah. And my husband turned around and looked at me. He said, Nancy, why don't you ask the author of the book who he wants to get it published through? So I was like, oh. So I did an automatic writing again. And Spirit said that that's why Balboa Press had been brought to my attention, that they would do a really good job for me, and I would be very pleased with them. And so I went through them, and I submitted my book the end of October, November. And it was published in 2 months. So if I would have listened to Spirit to, instead of to another person, my book would have been published 2 years earlier, and it may have been able to help a lot of people.
Well, everything comes out when it's supposed to. And I think that's a marvelous story. And you said so many things along the way that I'd love to comment on. First of all, let me ask, where is your book available? And I love the title, Choices. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
The book is available through Balboa Press, through Barnes & Noble, and through Amazon.com. And in Denver, it's on the shelves of the Tattered Cover bookstores. You know, it just came to me that the book needed to be called Choices, because we all have choices. Whether we think we do or not, we all have choices. And we try to blame our upbringing, we try to blame society, we try to blame religious leaders, we try to blame the government, we try to blame everyone for the bad choices we've made. And the bottom line is, they're the choices that we have made. We may have felt disempowered or that we did not have any choices, but even if you don't make a choice, you're really making one, a decision. And it was just really important to me. And also, I knew that I had to have a rainbow on the cover of my book. So those were the two things I knew, that the book had to be called Choices and that it had to have a rainbow, because, you know, rainbow was a symbol of promise. And and it just turned out, this young lady that I had hired to work for me at the police department had moved to Maui to just escape a really bad situation. And the only way she thought she could get away from the situation was to put an ocean between her and this other person. And she had left her whole family, and I think I acknowledged her in the front of my book. She left her family, her friends, everything she knew behind to go to Maui. And for about, oh, I think it was 4 months, they lived in a little one-room shack, basically. Her little boy slept on the floor, and they didn't really know anybody. And now she is just, you know, her life has just been so fulfilled. And whenever we listen to our inner guidance, we can't go wrong. But she had sent me that picture. It's a picture of her, and it's on the cover of my book. And to me, it just exemplified everything, that when you do listen to your inner guidance, to Spirit, as frightening as it may be, you know, things will turn out the way they're supposed to. It's a guarantee. It's like the promise of the rainbow on the cover of my book.
Well, how do we do that when we're so absorbed in the chitter-chatter that goes on in our mind, and the expectations and advice that we're, the expectations of other people and the advice that they give us, which people tend to do? What can we do to tap into that inner voice, that inner guidance? Are there some practical tools that we can use?
I think you just, you know, when you have this, you know, hunch or gut feeling, you just, even if it's just a small, tiny voice, because when you don't listen to your inner guidance, it gets quieter and quieter and quieter. It's like if you have a friend and you never talk to that friend ever, ever, ever. And the only time you call that friend is when something devastating happens, and then you call them, hey, can you please help me out? I need $10,000. I need a ride across the country. I need, you know, that's not really a good friend. I think that you need to keep the lines of communication open. And even if it's just to say, hey, I'm having a lousy day, can you help me out? You know, or when something good happens, thank you so much, I really appreciate that. And one of the things that, to me personally, is that, you know, of course you expect God's Spirit to do miracles and wonderful, wonderful things. That's God can do things like that. What has really touched me the most is that Spirit will do tiny little things and take the time out of, you know, the whole universe just to do this tiny little thing just to touch you. It's just, it just amazes me. One day I was meditating and praying, and I was just asked Spirit to please show me that, you know, that he was there and that he cared about me, and just to show me some sort of a sign, you know, that he was there. And I, for some reason, I had my hands lifted up, and out of nowhere, this tiny little seed came drifting out of the sky and just landed in my hand. And to me, it just seemed like it was so sweet that it was a sign from Spirit to just come and let me know that, you know, he was listening to me and that he wanted me to know that he's always there with me. I think you just need to keep, the more you listen to that inner voice, the stronger it gets, and then pay attention. Oh, simple little things. Like one day I was driving down, we used to live in the country in Colorado, and I usually take the same route because I'm directionally challenged, and I just felt really strongly that I needed to take Midsummer Lane instead of the road I normally take. And so I took it, and it was a blizzard. It was really, the conditions were really bad. And as I turned the corner, there was a car just off the side of the road. It wasn't in a ditch or anything, but it was just off the side of the road. And I was like, oh my gosh, there was nobody in the car. And I drove further, and there's this little old lady walking down the road in this blizzard without a jacket. She's got this little sweater held over her head, and I stopped and asked her, do you need a ride? And she said, yes, I do. She said, I'm supposed to pick up a couple of goats today. And it just, as it happened, it was a lady that I used to get raw goat's milk from, so I knew exactly where she was. And I took her, and then she said, thank you. And I said, well, don't you want to take the, you know, you're not going to walk the goats down there, are you? They're really wimps. They don't like, you know, rain or snow. And she said, well, I didn't know if you'd want them in your car. I said, sure, I love animals. So she put them in the car and brought me, and I took her back to her car. And it was just, you know, it makes you feel so wonderful when you can be of service, you can do something for somebody. And she wasn't from around here. She could have gotten lost. You couldn't see. Visibility wasn't that great. And so whenever Spirit gives you some sort of guidance or direction, just listen to it and see where it takes you. And then when something turns out and you see that you were right, that it was, you know, the voice of God or Spirit, then you'll just keep doing it more and more and more. And pretty soon you build up trust. And the more you work on a relationship with Spirit, that's, God just wants you to pay attention and to trust. You know, that's why I had to move to Whitby, because I still needed to learn to trust, and I needed to learn to let go. You know, as a kid that grew up in poverty, not even having enough food to eat, it's hard for me. If I get something, I don't want to let it go. I just hold on with ironclad hands, and boy, you know, because I still have that fear, I guess, that there won't be anything else around the next corner. And it was, to me, it was a huge, it was kind of like a little, not final, I'm sure, but a big kind of grand finale for me to leave my home and 4 acres that I loved. I just loved that home. It was just, to me, it was a sanctuary. I always wanted to be Heidi as a kid and to have my own secret garden, and I had a garden on the south. The whole south side of my yard was a garden, and I just didn't want to let it go for something that I didn't even know, you know, what else was out there. So we need to learn to trust. And it's hard. It's hard to learn to let go and just to trust. And, you know, you can't see spirit. I can see you. I can see my animals. I can see my husband. So it's easier to trust what we can see. But you know what? Sometimes what we can't see is so much more real than what we can.
How true. Well, I think that most people have difficulty with trust, whether or not they would admit it, and that they live from a place of fear because they don't truly know how to love themselves, let alone love other people. And that's sad. And yet when people begin to build some trust, and it starts at an individual level, you need to work on yourself and take responsibility for your life and for your own happiness. And when you can start to do that bit by bit, you will start to trust more and more. And spirit is alien to some people. And if it is alien to them, what would you suggest that they do to start building trust within themselves?
First of all, I really agree so completely with what you just said. It was just really so wise, is that we don't trust ourselves. And, you know, we don't, I think that so many of us don't think we're worthy. You know, growing up as a kid, my dad always told me that I was a black widow. I was the black sheep. No one would ever love me. And you believe what you're told as a kid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I went to, then later on in life, I was married to before, and we were elders in this church, and I wanted to do a good job. I've always been kind of anal, so I went to Bible college, and I remember there was a verse in the Bible talking about, you know, something in my father's house, there are many mansions, and it's talking about that there are plates made of the finest silver, and they're used to serve, you know, guests. And then there are just really some plain plates, just, you know, dishes, and they're just used to take out the trash. And I remember thinking that I was one of those plain plates. I was only good enough to take out the trash. But that's what man has told you. Spirit never told me that.
Mm.
And when you start listening to spirit instead of man, you build your confidence. I never allowed anybody into my life. You know what? It's another form of self-fulfilling prophecy. If you believe something and you focus on it, you draw it towards you. I never thought I was lovable or that anybody would like me, or that when I finally quit wallowing in my own misery and just thinking about me, 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 and started seeing misery in other people and in the world and reached out to help them, that was the happiest I have ever been, because I realized that I did have a purpose, that people did need me, that I could help others, that I was important, and it build up my own confidence. As long as you're just focusing on you and your woes and hardships, you're never going to be happy, because the more you focus on something, the more you draw it to you.
Right. Well, I think that's a big piece of wisdom. And, you know, the other thing that I was thinking about as you were talking was how we tend to attract to ourselves whatever we put out. It's like a spiritual law, and people have heard the expression, what goes around comes around.
Mm-hmm.
That happens in so many different ways, and sometimes very blatantly so, but we are responsible for projecting what is positive if we want to have positive results in our lives. And a great way to do that is what you've just said, is by being of service to other people, getting outside of ourselves, trying to take a look at the big picture, and becoming part of that vibrant tapestry of life. And, you know, it's interesting you picked the title for your book, Choices. And we're talking with Nancy Byrne today, who's written a book called Choices that was published by Balboa Press. And earlier in the program, you talked about how you believe that we make the choice of the family that we come into, that the soul makes that choice. So if that's so, and I agree with you, I believe that to be true, ultimately we're responsible each step of the way. And from what you're saying also, that starts at a soul level. So therefore, if somebody can wrap their minds around that and consider for a moment that the soul makes all choices each step of the way, and when you can learn to trust that soul, that spirit, because it's part of a higher consciousness, a higher source that's incomprehensible and has all power, which we can tap into. When you can do that, you can overcome anything, as Nancy has done. And what I liked, what you were saying earlier in the show, and I wanted to comment on a couple of things. You were talking about having come up from a background that was not a happy one, and that it taught you to be more compassionate to other people, and you recognized a lot of the gifts that came out of that dark cloud that had the silver lining that was Nancy. And in so doing, you have brought light into this world, and you have brought light through sharing your voice and your gifts with other people, the work that you've done, the book that you've written, and the spirit that you embrace today, which is the truth of your being. And it's a powerful force. And you talk, therefore, at that moment in time about gratitude and how important it is to count your blessings. And I'm a firm believer in that, because there seems to be another spiritual law at work as far as our ability to embrace and experience the abundance that God wants for his children or her children, however you perceive God to be, the universe's children, that when you focus on how God has met your most basic needs, chances are many other needs too, that it seems to attract more and more abundance and more things to be grateful for. What do you think about that?
Oh, I agree. We had to do this project in undergrad school, and it was on self-fulfilling prophecy. And I mentioned it in my book, but I found this cartoon, and it was just really applicable. It was cute, but there's this little girl, and she's waiting for the school bus to come and pick her up on her first day of school, and she does not want to go to school. She's terrified. She's trying to convince her mom that's not for her. Everybody's going to hate her. Nobody's going to like her. She doesn't want to go. She's not going to enjoy it. And there she is. Her mom makes her go out, and she's standing by the bus, and all the kids are all excited, and they're talking and laughing and sharing. She's got her hands folded across her chest, and she's just looking at them and standing apart from all the kids. Then they get onto the bus. She sits in the very, very back seat, far away from all the other kids. And then they're in the hallway in school, and all the kids are laughing and talking, and she's just standing there at her locker, just scowling at everyone. And then finally it's lunchtime, and she's sitting at this huge table. It's like the biggest table in the whole cafeteria. And all these kids are, like, walking clear around her, like just really trying to avoid her like the plague. And she's like, see, I knew I was right. Nobody likes me. But she brought it on herself by her actions and her behavior and the energy she put towards the other kids. They thought she was terrifying, you know? No one wants to be around somebody. Everyone likes to be around people that lift them up and bring joy into their life. No one likes to be around people that are continuously sad and miserable and drama kings or queens, and they have something terrible going on every day of their lives, because even if they do, it brings other people down, and no one likes to be brought down. People like to grasp, you know, whatever little bit of happiness they can get.
Mm-hmm. How
and
true.
So if you're always unhappy, you're going to just, you know, then pretty soon you find yourself with no friends, no one wants to be around you, and you can't figure out why. You're desperate, you want somebody to help you, you really want a friend to be there for you, but if all you do is drain that person, they're not going to want to be around you. There's a story I heard, and I don't even remember where I heard it, but it's about these two identical twin brothers. And this is just to, you know, I think that the spirit does, you know, give you guidance and everything, but I think that we do have our free will and we can make our choices. But there were these two twin brothers, and they were identical twins, and one was on death row in prison for, he was a serial murderer, a serial killer. And the other one was a priest. And so this newspaper man was interviewing them both, you know, to find out what had led them to the paths that they had chosen. So he went to prison and was talking to the brother that was on death row, and he said, "So how did you end up this way? What happened in your life that caused you to end up in prison, you know, on death row for, you know, murder?" And the man said, "Well," he goes, "you know, my father was a drunk, and he beat us on a regular basis." He said, "What choice did I have, you know, but to become like him?" So then they went to the priest and they interviewed him. And they said, "So what happened in your life? How did you end up as a priest who has, you know, received, you know, prizes and all this acclaim for helping so many people? What was it that caused you, you know, to be so compassionate and caring for others?" And he said, the priest said, "Well," he said, "you know, my father was an alcoholic and he beat us on a regular basis. He was very abusive." He said, "What choice did I have but to become compassionate and to try to save others and undo the wrongs that he had done?"
I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
I knew that was coming. Well, it's all a matter of perspective, isn't it?
It's all a matter of, yes. There was something on Facebook just the other day that really I thought was really cute, and it said, "Boiling water makes an egg hard, but it makes a potato soft. So it's not your circumstances so much as what you're made of."
Absolutely. Now, you have worked as an executive director for a woman in need of support group program and a rape crisis center, and as director of a victim services unit at a major police department. So you've dealt with people that have had some really hard knocks, who have had to face up to empowering themselves. And that's one of the things that you're about, is teaching people to empower themselves. How can you carry that message forward in the world? And what has your work experience done to shape you to do that in the world at large today? Because now you're speaking to a different audience, and you are a survivor who's turned into a thriver.
I like that. I think that, you know, because we are all connected, whatever we do to one, we do to ourselves. One of my psychology professors was talking about, it's like the plumbing in the house. You can't get one sink plugged up and have the water running, you know, smoothly throughout the house, because all the plumbing is connected, and it's the same with all of humanity. And so when we reach out to empower others or to help somebody, we really are empowering ourselves. It's kind of the you know, the, what is it? The story of the 100th monkey. Somebody taught a monkey clear out on this deserted island or something how to break open a coconut on a rock so that they could get the meat out of the coconut. And then, and it was just one monkey, one isolated monkey. And then someplace clear on the other side of the world, it was observed that the monkeys were breaking the coconuts on the rock. If spirit lives in all of us, we are all connected. We are all a part of the divine, and we don't have to watch something on TV, on the news. no one has to tell us. We all share the same knowledge and wisdom and information. It's just amazing how spirit works. You know, I talked about having blinders on, and we want something to happen, and we have our own tiny little view of how it can happen. I would love to be able to serve the multitudes, not just hundreds of people, but millions of people, to be able to share Spirit's message with the multitudes. Well, I'm just one person. I have no idea how to do that. I'm not great at promoting myself. But Spirit sees the whole picture. It's like, and I've used this analogy before, but it's kind of like, you know, you want to do this great big huge musical production and you want it to be just fantastic. You have no idea. It's just you're one person and you're limited on resources, and you know, but Spirit can see the whole picture. Spirit is able to get somebody to come to you to bring you this amazing building that everyone will want to come in. It's just a, you know, just a old Victorian building or something. That's just, the acoustics are tremendous in that building. Spirit is able to get all the stage hands in place, to get the seamstresses in order to make the most amazing outfits, to get the band, to get the seconds, to get everybody all together to put this amazing production, this breathtaking production. You could never have done it. You have to do your part. You're just part of the big, you know, the big production. But Spirit is able to put it all together so it all comes together. The desire of your heart will come together. And I honest and truly did not write this book. It would have been a very depressing book if I would have written it. And so I really believe that Spirit wants the message to get out there. We do have choices. We have been given our free will. We were created in the likeness and the image of God. We can do anything. There is a place in the Bible that says, "Know ye not that ye are gods?" And when Jesus was turning wine or water into wine and all this stuff, he said, "All these things that I do and more shall ye do." You know, when somebody, you read accounts all the time when somebody's child is under the wheels of their car, they not only lift the car up, they lift it with one hand and push their child out of the way with the other. We can do anything. Nothing is impossible for us if we just believe. I honestly believe that. I honestly do. And then I turn around the next day and doubt that I should be moving to Whidbey Island because I'm scared. But in my heart, I know that it's true. We can do anything. Nothing is impossible for us. Nothing. Because we have the creator of the universe on our side. All you have to do is ask for help and do your part and believe, and it happens. It just happens.
Well, Nancy, you are a prophet in your own time. You put it out so eloquently. You're a spinner of stories, just like Jesus was. And you are an example to all of those who've grown up in traumatic circumstances that if Nancy can do it, so can you. And I want to thank you so much for coming to the show this evening, for bringing your faith. And I would love to have you back again sometime to do some readings. And we can talk about that. In fact, I'll give you a call after the show.
Great. I would like that. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.